Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net! Ramel Quiroga now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! It's a Honduran connection.
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome in, everybody, to Soccer Matters here tonight on Monday in Austin, Texas. I'm your host, Glenn Davis. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Soccer Matters, each and every week, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm on the Horn here in Austin. It's DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. John Daspit and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they will represent you 24/7. They are bilingual. Again, it's 512-865-6710. All right, we're off and running here tonight. We've got an excellent program in store for you. Austin FC President Andy Lochnane, he'll be in the next segment, and we will close the show out tonight talking about the U.S. men's national team roster with American Soccer Now Brian Sciarretta as we go deep into that roster ahead of the U.S. against Wales and Panama. Major League Soccer, well, we're all set up for the playoffs. Play-in matches will take place Friday, November 20th. New England will take on the Montreal Impact. That's Bruce Arena against Thierry Henry. Nashville SC against Inter Miami, the two expansion teams. And then round one, it's Orlando City and New York City FC, Columbus versus the New York Red Bulls, Toronto FC against the highest-seeded play-in winner, the Philadelphia Union, the Supporters Shield winners against the lower-seeded play-in winner in the Eastern Conference. Western Conference, it's number one Sporting Kansas City against number eight San Jose and Matias Almeida. Interesting matchup there. Minnesota United and the Colorado Rapids. The Rapids, remember, five less games. Could be fresh, could be a dangerous animal in these playoffs against Minnesota United. Then the Portland Timbers taking on FC Dallas. And, of course, Seattle Sounders and LAFC. That's a good one there between Brian Schmetzer and Bob Bradley. All right, let's get you off and running here tonight, though. Our first guest from Manchester, England, now living in the United States, great personal friend, doing an amazing job battling cancer. His name is Tom Clare. You've heard him on the show before. He's a noted author. He's written books called Forever a Babe and The Men Who Were the Busby Babes. Amazing historian. Did an interview with Tom talking about the legendary Nobby Styles, a 66 World Cup winner and European Cup winner, but also around the legends of the game in England that are passing on, many of them with dementia. Here is Tom Clare. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, Glenn. It's very, very nice to hear you and good to join you.
Always nice to talk with you, too. Now, you and I have talked about this next topic a lot. Dementia has struck the world of football. We've lost another great one in the legendary Nobby Styles, 66 World Cup winner, European Cup. The list of the names that we have lost now goes on and on. And you really opened my eyes to the fact that the PFA and the FA has really not done much for this, what is now becoming a bygone generation. And some of these, you know, great players are just dying in obscurity and nobody's really paying a whole lot of attention to them. Take us into some of this.
Yeah, well, you know, it all went back way back to around about 1998 when there was the first signs that dementia was becoming a problem in the game in UK. And the PFA actually did a study. They paid for a study to be held. There was 115 young players that they decided to monitor and have a look at. Now, nothing was heard of for over 10 years. And not until Jeff Astle, the former England centre-forward, West Bromwich and England centre-forward, died from dementia, did this all come to light again. And what happened, Jeff Astle's brain was given to the medical people, and they had a look at it. And they found that it the findings of what they did was that his brain was akin to that of a boxer's, the guy who's been hit about the head so much. And it was decided at the end that the cause of his death was down to industrial injury, which is what his family were fighting for. Now, the PFA and the FA vehemently opposed this. They said there was no correlation with it whatsoever. And they dug their heels in. And the study that they'd done in 1998 was buried and could never be found. And they said it was completed, but they can't remember what the findings were. So this is where I got involved with it, because I knew that Nobby Styles was suffering from it. And I started to do some research. And when you looked at it, you know, from that 1966 World Cup winning team, Ray Wilson, Nobby Styles, Jack Charlton, Bobby Charlton, Roger Hunt, and Martin Peters have all succumbed to dementia. So I was digging more, and I was amazed when I found out that without even looking too hard, I came up with over 200 people, well-known players who died from dementia or were suffering from it. And I made a big song and dance about it, and because I was appalled that the PFA and the FA were doing absolutely nothing, and they were opposing anything, to do with a further investigation and a look at, you know, why this was happening. Since then, there have been so many players who've died from it and who are suffering from it. You know, I mean, Tommy Smith, Billy McNeil, so many great players. And
Peter
they've
Bonetti?
Had no help whatsoever from the PFA or the FA. And it's been left to the families to bear the brunt of this. And of course, the nursing side of it's expensive. And in a lot of ways, they've had to sell their descendants have had to sell their homes to pay for the care for their loved ones. And it was absolutely appalling to me, you know, that the PFA, you know, many of the families appealed to the PFA for help, and they were just rebuffed. You know, so it really is a bad situation, Glenn.
Tom Clare joining us, the noted author. I recommend that you read his books. You can find him online. All you got to do is Google Tom Clare and Manchester United, the men who were the Busby Babes. Tom, the other thing that, you know, we have to remember, too, is, you know, these guys didn't make the money that's being made now. So, you know, some of these players and their families and their wives have, to your point, not really been helped out the way these legends have, because after all, they have paved the way. These names are incredible. I mean, Nobby Styles is another one, and we just lost him. Tell us about Nobby.
Oh, no, Nobby. Well, I've known Nobby. Well, I did know Nobby from school days. He was just a little older than me, but our families, my grandfather and Nobby's father, were great, great friends and worked with each other closely at St. Patrick's Church in Colliest and also in local politics there. And I got to know Nobby as a young boy, you know, and they were a staunch Manchester United family, and Nobby, you know, I saw him play for St. Patrick's, and then he went on for Manchester Boys, Lancashire, and played for England Schoolboys. And there was only one club that he was ever going to join, and of course that was Manchester United, which he did in 1957. And he joined, you know, that really great team, that great staff that was there then, the Busby Babes. But sadly, 6 months after he joined was the tragic Munich disaster, and of course, you know, it did the upheaval in the club and everything. So a lot of the young players were pushed forward, and at 15 and 16, Nobby was already playing in the reserve team, and he went on to make his debut in 1960 against Bolton Wanderers at Burnham Park, and he became something of a fixture. But in those days, he was an inside forward. He's what we would say was an attacking midfielder today. And he was very good, you know, but Jimmy Murphy saw something in him, and there was a bit of a problem with him. He kept picking up bookings and what today are yellow cards and everything. And Harry Gregg, who I visited last December, actually told me the story. He said, I kept watching him in training. He said, and his mistiming of tackles was terrible. He said, I got a hold of him and he said, I asked him, I said, is your sight bothering you? You know, and Nobby said, well, I've always had bad eyesight. So Harry Gregg went to see Matt Busby and Busby got him off to see an optometrist. And of course, that's where he was diagnosed with the bad eyesight and where you know, they countered it with the contact lenses and what have you. And that seemed to do the job. And it was in a few training matches where he played alongside Bill Foulkes as a dual centre-back. And it worked. And Jimmy Murphy, you know, said to Busby, you know, this is the partnership that we wanted. And he went there and he played alongside Bill Foulkes for nearly 5 years, 5-6 years, you know. And, of course, he forced his way into the England team in 1965. He played in his first international, which I saw at Wembley when he played against Scotland in a 2-2 draw. And between then and 1969, he was hardly out of the side. And, of course, he was a member of that wonderful World Cup winning team in 1966. But Nobby was a fierce competitor, but he was also a very bright player. He read the game well. What a lot of people don't realise about Nobby, he was tenacious in the tackle, but he could also pass the ball as well, you know. And yeah. And he was a great addition and a good partner for the granite type of centre half that Bill Foulkes was.
Tom, I only have 20 seconds with you, and you're going to have to answer this very, very quickly. Is Manchester United doing enough for these former legends?
No. Neither Manchester United, the Football League, the Premier League, the PFA, they've all got the money, Glenn, and if they all put £10 million into a foundation fund, the care homes could be built and maintained to look after these people.
We're going to leave it at that. Tom, you're the best. We thank you so much for coming on, and I'm going to be talking to you soon, buddy.
It's my pleasure, Glenn. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
All right. Speaking of legends, well, Tom Clare's a legend. Forever a Babe, the men who were the Busby Babes, Manchester United, the original Trinity, and the United Tour of Manchester, Tom, with Ian McCartney. You got to read these books if you really want to go into the history and feel it, because it jumps off the pages. And the memory and the detail is off the charts. So that's segment one with Tom Clare. Stay with us on Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. We roll on. Coming up next is Austin FC president Andy Lochnane. I know you're waiting for this one. He will be up next on the program. Again, as always, show brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. Bilingual personal injury attorneys, John and his firm. They will look after you 24/7. Nights and weekends, whether you're getting a motorcycle, boat, might drive an 18-wheeler, any of these types of accidents, John and his firm will represent you. Austin FC Talk with Andy Lochnane, next. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. We roll on here tonight. This is probably the interview everybody's waiting for here. President of Austin FC, and again, this interview is brought to you by John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com, our presenting sponsors. Andy Lochnane, the president of Austin FC, joining us now. Andy, thank you very much for being on the show again.
Well, thank you for the invitation again. Good evening.
All right, so we're going to start off. You and I were talking before we got on tonight a little about yesterday and kind of the finality of the regular season in Major League Soccer and what that meant to you personally. Just tell us about it.
Yeah, so first of all, I love Decision Day. It kind of turns into a bit of a crazy day on the calendar. And I guess for me, it represented the close of the last regular season before we join Major League Soccer. Of course, we've got an exciting playoffs ahead, but yesterday's wrap up of the regular season was a big milestone. I mean, that's one that we've been tracking too, because a couple teams, sorry to your Houston lineage and listeners, but a couple of teams now no longer are participating in this season, and B, it's an opportunity for us to get one step closer. So yeah, I guess, for us, Decision Day represented one day closer to our reality of joining next season's regular season.
Is it hard for you to believe how fast this has gone, or has it gone in slow motion? For me, I think it's gone fast. Now, I know you're putting in these crazy 16, 18-hour days, and that's essentially what was you were up against, putting this all together. But, you know, what did it go fast or slow? Get to this point.
It probably goes faster than any of us would like, but yeah, I mean, listen, we all work long days. I think that's one of the things that probably has been a byproduct of COVID. I think most people are probably working their job a little bit longer, for better or for worse. In our case, it's kind of an advantage, to be fair. Some of the working conditions and some of the limitations on travel and some of the ways that we're all more efficient, you know, for example, I've discovered that meetings start on time a little bit more regularly than they would have previously. I'm imagining some people have discovered the same phenomenon. That allows you to be a little more efficient. I'm finding that it's a little easier to put in that extra hour or 2 hours into the day without it feeling completely strenuous on other parts of your life that you need to kind of keep sane. So I know this is... it's difficult to try and find any upside in everything that has been our life the last 8 months, given how incredibly difficult this has been for most people and how challenging this has been for most people. But I suppose if there's one random light at the end of the tunnel, and that is, this does allow us to build this business that so many Austinites are looking forward to. It's just created a little bit more of an efficient working model for us.
He's Andy Lochnane, the president of Austin FC. I just think it's wonderful how you've engaged and how the city has responded organically. And you know, I've had a lot of the supporters groups on the show, La Murga, Austin Anthem, Los Verdes. All these guys and gals are just so jacked for this. But watching it and kind of looking at it, you must just say it's incredible the participation that's already occurred. You only have two players signed. The ball hasn't even been kicked. A stadium is being erected, but it is really remarkable just watching this thing sort of percolate into this thing that's going to ultimately just go boom.
And again, in the backdrop of what's been an incredibly difficult and challenging year for just about everybody. Yeah, the growth it's energizing. It's probably closer to inspirational than anything else. And I think for everybody that's listening to this program, I mean, this is important for everybody to understand. It does drive us to see people respond to the growth of the club, building out our partners, building out our infrastructure, building out our season ticket base. This is you know, the fact that it has a level of receptivity in the market is one thing, but I think everybody who's listening should know this. It's important to us too. Like, it is fuel for us. It's inspirational that you guys are behind us. So, I think some of the images that I love in particular is seeing our supporters congregate at the stadium, kind of that pilgrimage to their Mecca, you know, hanging out at our little soccer cathedral that's being built out. And whether it's a Sunday afternoon or, you know, after work on Tuesday, I know there's a lot of people who like spending time in that parking lot and cracking open a cold one and kind of thinking about what it'll be what it'll look like and what it will be like in less than, less than a year's time. So I think everybody needs to understand it is really inspiring for us.
Yeah, I love that give and take. It fuels both parties, as you mentioned. All right, so tomorrow, Andy, big day at the stadium. I know you got a lot of interviews there. You've got grass down. Tell us about what happens with you tomorrow.
Yeah, so we, for a lot of reasons, namely COVID, we've been extremely cautious about having media into the stadium. It's one of those situations where we just need to, A, focus on construction, and B, worry a little less about publicity, perhaps less so than anybody would desire. So we've had to be extremely conscientious, and it's probably one of those things where, again, a growing club would want as much publicity as it could generate, and a construction project can do that. So We know that there's been a lot of interest on media's part to get inside of the stadium. The last time we had a media day, and this is unusual, I mean, in a normal non-COVID environment, we'd probably have updates. You know, media crews would be in there pretty frequently, you know, maybe even once a month, once every other month. But the last time we were able to host a media day in the stadium was January of 2020. So here we are roughly 11 months later. A lot of progress to show. So tomorrow we'll be able to invite some camera crews in, take a look at the stadium, and hopefully appreciate some of the growth that's happened in the last 11 months. And I think most people who've seen our photos, seen our social media, seen the drone footage, there's a lot to be happy about.
All right. Lots of things going on around you. Let's talk a little bit about a jersey unveil that's going to ultimately happen here and what information you can give to the fan base.
Well, I guess what we've done is we've teased a little bit as part of a campaign that, you know, we anticipate at some point here releasing what will be the first ever Austin FC jersey. So I wish I could give you more, but I get paid to keep secrets. So hopefully the group is sufficiently teased. But our objective all along before COVID was to introduce our first ever jersey in time for holiday of 2020. And it became a little bit more difficult and a little bit more complex and a lot more challenging given what's gone on in the last 8 months. But I think we're going to be able to deliver on that promise to have a jersey ready for Austin to hopefully fall in love with across the holiday season. So that's our target. I think we're going to be able to meet that objective. And I'm really proud of the team who's put this together.
Has it been fun for you now to see kind of some of the parts in motion? I mean, you got Claudio working, the sporting director. You got Josh. You got Academy Games going on. You got the stadium now really getting polished and getting to that point now. Some of these things that are making it all feel closer. From being the guy who came into Austin and had to do a bunch of hiring of people to get it all in motion.
Of course, it's fun seeing the growth. Like I think we think about growth maybe in the same way that most businesses do, right? Growth in our revenues, growth in our headcount, growth in our, you know, affinity. Let's talk a little bit about our staff size. You know, we're now a staff of approximately 70 full-time staff members. It's a little north of that. You know, we've had to be pretty mindful of all things going on globally, you know, with the economy. So our original staffing plan had us at a higher number than 70 full-time staff members. When we originally built out our hiring sequence for launching a team. But nonetheless, we have to be ready for what will be the 2021 season. So as much as we have to be mindful, like any business would, in terms of costs and what's going on in the market, we are growing. And I know that makes us kind of an unusual business, but for us, we're all about growth right now. And in particular, we keep an eye on the infrastructure projects because, you know, we're not doing just one little construction project. We happen to be managing two. Sometimes people forget about our training facility project. So in addition to our $260 million privately financed stadium project, which, by the way, remains on schedule, we're also building another on-schedule project, which is our $45 million training facility, which is about 5 miles from our stadium. And it's this incredible 4.5 field state-of-the-art training facility that is basically the office for our players. And it's it is beautiful. Grass is installed there. Grass actually got installed at the training facility about 10 days before the stadium. But it's beautiful to see the training facility. It looks like literally looks like an emerald jewel with all of the green grass. It's pretty spectacular.
Well, listen, Andy, we thank you so much for coming on. I hope you get some rest, too. I know you've been putting in some incredible hours here. It, from afar, it looks amazing. It's been great to see the reaction of the fans and the give and take between the organization. And I love the comment you made about each side fueling each other and driving each other. That's what it's supposed to be. So, as always, thank you for coming on. Let's get you on again real soon.
Thank you, Glenn. Talk soon. Stay well.
You got it. That's Andy Lachman, Austin FC president. Things are happening tomorrow. Media in the stadium. We'll take a quick break. We come back. We'll talk U.S. national team with Brian Sciarretta of American Soccer Now. And I know I'm going to be your man. All right, welcome back to the show. Final segment of the night here on Soccer Matters on the Horn in Austin, Texas, as always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they'll work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. Get that representation you need with the Daspit Law Firm. Could be in a motorcycle accident, bike, car. 18-wheeler. You might work in a construction. Call the Daspit Law Firm again. 512-865-6710. It's DaspitLawAustin.com, and they are bilingual, and we thank them for being our presenting sponsors. All right, November 12th, the United States will take on Wales. You'll be able to catch that game on FS1, Tuda NA, and Unimas. And then on November 16, the U.S. will take on Panama. But this is a roster that really has turned a lot of heads simply because of the clubs that are listed in Europe that all these men are playing on. And, of course, sure, we go to the Weston McKennie's playing at Juventus, the Christian Pulisic's at Chelsea, the Gio Reyna's at Dortmund. Gio likely going to get his first ever cap for the U.S. But up and down, this is a full European roster with players in differing places. Some are established, some are looking to get established, but nonetheless, it's a roster of statement. Joining us now, Brian Sciarretta of American Soccer Now. How's everything in the Garden State up there?
It's gotten a lot colder, man. Oh, man, is it? It was rainy earlier in the week, but now it's just cold. Winter is here.
But are we getting? We're not getting some of that nice fall weather yet, huh?
Well, we had it. It's already made like the transition. Great foliage though this year.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we got a little cooler weather here, so that's why my seasons are all off. I'm remembering now. You're getting into the winter, and we're into the fall. But let's talk about the big news today. Greg Berhalter, the U.S. They announced the roster that's going to play against Wales on November 12th, Panama on November 16th. You know, we put some details about this out on the show, but this is an incredibly intriguing roster, just simply from, and I'm not trying to blow some of these guys up before they deserve to be blown up or need to be blown up, but just to see where some of these young talents are positioned to me is pretty remarkable, Brian.
Yeah, it is an exciting time. I think, you know, it's never been rare for Americans to be at big clubs at the youth levels. You know, some of these guys are now poking their head up into the first team, which is great. I mean, some of them are much further along than others. I mean, I definitely call them, you have the core five. You know, you have McKennie, Pulisic, Reyna, Dest, and McKennie, I think. I didn't repeat myself. I think I got all five. And then after that, there tends to be a pretty big drop-off, you know, in terms of guys who are, you know, at these big clubs, but where are they in relation to their playing time? You know, I think they're all on the roster. I think for now, we'll see how, you know, Adams and Pulisic progress throughout the week and whether or not a change will have to be made there. You know, and I think it is exciting to see some of these things, to see some of these players and where they're at. You know, whether they justify further call-ups after this, you know, it's going to come down to how they do in this camp and how they do, you know, moving forward with their clubs, because there's a lot of players there. I was counting earlier. I mean, we're approaching double digits of the 24 that have played fewer than 10 professional first team games, you know, over the last 2 years, two seasons, a season and a half. That's not a lot. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic, but there's a lot of these players, you know, have a very long way to go.
All right, 21 years of age plus 300 days is the average age of this team. Okay, so based on the way this roster is made up, how much of this has provided opportunity to young guys because of COVID? And then how much of this is really about assessment for Greg Berhalter and getting a finger on some of these younger players that are in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the COVID restrictions have, you know, prevent, you know, MLS players, some key MLS players from coming in and playing. And that's too bad because there's a lot of outstanding young players. in MLS that you would think would be on a roster like this. I mean, we see Daryl DK and Bobisi. There's just the Io Akinola. I mean,
maybe an Eric Williamson.
Eric Williamson's been tremendous, and so has and obviously you want to look at goalkeepers too, because not one of these goalkeepers on this roster today is a starter for his club. And I mean, long gone are the days when you had Friedel, Howard, Keller, and Hahnemann all playing at high levels together in Europe. So so a lot of this is COVID related in terms of getting a blended roster, but in terms of this direction to take with, and also with, without COVID, you would also have the U23 and U20 teams playing. And that would be also allowing to have multiple teams going at one time too. But yeah, definitely they want to take a look at young players and let them know that they're on the roster. So that's all very good. And these are low stakes friendlies too. I mean, the Wales will probably won't have all of its best players, and Panama won't be a full strength team either. So they'll get a chance to play games that they should win too, with such a young and inexperienced roster.
Talking to Brian Chiaretta of American Soccer Now, and appreciate this getting you on the show tonight. 3 goalkeepers picked, 7 defenders, 6 midfielders, 8 forwards. A couple of guys I want to talk to you about, because I think you're going to know a little bit more about them than most because of the work you do following people. I want to go first to a midfielder from Internacional in Brazil, Johnny Cardoso. I've had an opportunity to watch him on TV a little bit. Tell us a little bit about him.
He was from the Garden State, Denville, New Jersey. He was born here, still has family and friends up here. Moved back to Brazil when he was young. And now he's playing for Internacional. Not every game. I mean, he had some injury concerns here and there, and he's not an everyday starter for them, but he's getting enough minutes for, a player of his age, 18, 19 years old, born in 2001. That's one of the biggest non-European teams in the world. I mean, that's a huge club to be part of, and he's done well. I know Berhalter scouted him and brought him into the USU 23 team last year, where he made his American debut, and Jason Christ raved about him. So he's got the U20s possibly, and maybe the next 2 U23 teams to play for as well. So that there is a benefit towards bringing in some of these players of that age range at this age. But yeah, he's a defensive midfielder. And one of the big areas of concern I have for this team, for the U.S. team moving forward, is backup for Tyler Adams at the number 6 defensive midfield position. There's not a lot of options, particularly guys who can cover ground and hit longer passes there. And Tyler's had some injury problems as well. So, I think it's good to look at guys like him and Owen Odesowi, the kid from Wolves who's on this roster as well, some guys in MLS. I think that, that area, that position really needs to be explored in depth, because they need options there.
Brian Chiaretta joining us from American Soccer Now. Okay, so Owen Odesowi, so we have a Wolves group here in Houston, Wolverhampton, and one of the guys in that group is a name, Paul LePage, and Paul has told me to keep an eye on Owen Odesowi. Is that how you pronounce it? Nigerian?
Yes, Odesowi, yes.
Odesowi. And, he's been raving about him. I've never seen him play, but we're hearing tremendous things about him as a central midfield player.
Yeah, and look, I've heard tremendous things. He played for the US U18 team 3 different times a couple years ago, and when I was talking to some of the young prospects and coaching staff about, people around that team, they were raving about him. They think he's just unbelievable. The one thing, though, is that he can also play central defense. His position's not really quite settled between the defensive midfield and central defense. So that's one of these things that'll have to get sorted out in his career. You want him to be a little consistent with where he plays, not just be like a jack of all trades. You really want him to be a master at one, and then maybe have some second positions he can play. But so we'll see where he eventually settles in. But I mean, he's just a phenomenally gifted athlete, and has got a lot of good things going for him.
All right, Sergiño Dest at Barcelona now. He's been getting some regular playing time. This roster is littered with a couple of veterans that might be able to lead here, with Tim Ream, John Brooks, players like that who have been in before. Take me into another player that has really been talked about quite a lot here, because I think he's made a level of commitment to the U.S., at least for this camp, not full-time yet, but that's the Valencia player, Yunus. Talk to me Yunus a little Masua. Bit about him.
Yeah, Yunus Masua he was born in New York, and I have never spoken with him, and it always helps. And I usually speak with a lot of these dual nationals at an early age. I have not spoken with him, so it's tough to know, like, his commitment or attachment to the United States. I read an interview once where he said, I was only born in the U.S. because my mom went there on a holiday. I mean, doesn't sound like he's too attached to the U.S., but he also moved from U.S. To Italy to England. You know, he was a star in the Arsenal Academy, but instead made a bolt for Valencia. Has already made his first team debut and scored, in La Liga. And that's a big stage for Valencia in La Liga. And, he's playing as an outside midfielder, but eventually the club and Berhalter, I believe, see him playing centrally, box to box, but a guy who can cover a ton of ground. I mean, he's so athletic and he's got some skill, and he's so young too as well. So, they got themselves a real athlete on their hands, and we'll see where his international future is beyond after this camp. I mean, Berhalter was quite clear today in the press conference that they hope it's with the U.S. his U.S. future, but that remains to be seen. So, but look, they got their foot in the door with them. They're talking. They have a chance to make a strong and good first impression. I think that's really all you can ask for. Job well done with him.
Valencia currently 13 out of the 20 teams in the Liga. But, okay, so where is the point where we have to be careful about overblowing some of these players right now and finding that balance between being excited as American soccer fans but also making sure that we have the tendency to blow people up very, very quickly here at very, very young ages when they're still in their developmental stage. So where is the fine line there in balance with this roster to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And I think, like I said earlier in the show, there's been a lot of club players at big clubs, Americans at big clubs before. And for whatever reason, they just don't materialize. And, you can talk a lot about the players who go over there into these clubs and just don't make it. And I've seen even players who even then get on the first team and play a couple of games, and then next thing you know, they're gone and they just don't stick around. But we're still at a lot of players here on this team that they're just not regulars yet, and maybe they will be, maybe they won't be. So it's always, you have to be very cautious in how you blow these guys up. Don't say Uli Lanez is, don't write him in ink on the 23 man roster for the 2022 World Cup or even World Cup qualifiers. I mean, we're dealing with a guy who's only come off the bench for a few late minutes at Heerenveen while he's on loan from Wolfsburg. And even Tim Weah, who's not making the match day roster right now at Lille. So these are players that I think a lot of people are familiar with, but you also have to see where the proof is in the pudding. I mentioned those core five players. That's different. There's genuine incitement when a guy's, an everyday starter or first one off the bench for a Champions League team. I mean, there's a huge gap between there. And then, Chris Richards has a lot of promise. Tab Ramos raved about him with the USU 20 team, but where are the games going to be on a regular basis for him? We don't know. So until players really prove that they're, where the minutes are going to be for them and that they're going to be consistent, the gap between being around the first team and being on the first team and getting minutes is huge. So you have to kind of respect that gap when you talk about the hype on some of these players.
Yeah, talk about that hype a little bit further when it comes to media in this country. Are we too quick to anoint people? How do you think the media has handled, let's say, a Gio Reyna and a Christian Pulisic?
I mean, Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic just have answered all the questions at a very early age. When you're 17 years old and you're starting in the number 10 position, you're the creative offensive engine for a Borussia Dortmund. I mean, you can't control hype around that. I mean, that puts him up there as one of the best 2002 born players in the world at this point. That's an amazing accomplishment for someone that age. And then, the hype is justified there. And same thing with Pulisic. I mean, he was from 17 years old, he was starting in the Champions League. I mean, those are real tangible accomplishments. I think when it gets out of control, in my younger days, I probably was more guilty of this, than I care to admit, but it's just by signing and being with teams and being affiliated with teams, that's, you got to have to pump the brakes there. You can talk about them. You certainly want to have players on the radar, but you don't want to just start anointing them. And you have to understand that play, you know, there's a lot of, you know, players at these big teams that aren't quite the level of elite prospects. They're organizational soldiers, as a friend of mine likes to use that. I like that term. Yeah. So that's a good one. Yeah. You have to just kind of understand the roles and read between the tea lines. And if you do write about them, keep it open-ended, like just talk, respect that gap of where they have to, they're maybe in a nice position, but where is that gap? I mean, you know, I could talk a lot about players who just, you know, who were at that level and just never made it, you know, so you just have to kind of understand these things and kind of sound like a wet blanket when you do talk about them, but that's probably the most accurate thing to do.
Well, listen, this is a roster that's really intriguing. It has a long range from guys that have been in the international game, the Brookses, the Reams, the ones that are established like Pulisic and Gio Reyna now. And then it goes down to guys that maybe, you know, Yunus Musa at Valencia and others that we don't know as much about, Johnny Cardoso. So I think it's really, really intriguing. It's pretty outstanding and exciting. I don't think there's anything wrong with getting excited. By the way, Reggie Cannon in there, who played for Boa Vista yesterday, who defeated Benfica, got a goal from Albert Elise to the former Dynamo. So exciting. I think there has never been a time in U.S. Soccer history where you've had a lineup and a roster that's had players from Barcelona, Fulham, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, Wolverhampton, Juventus. It is pretty incredible. Don't you think it's a bit of a statement?
Yeah, I mean, it is a statement I think a lot of these guys are in around the first team. There's no one that's completely buried at any one of these clubs, which is, you know, saying something amazing. I think it's certainly fair to be excited about this roster. Let's see what the kids can do, because they're playing against winnable opponents here where they can probably show their stuff. But I think that there is a long way to go for these guys to be regulars with the national team once the entire selection, becomes available at their disposal. And these guys could all get bumped by other players quickly. A lot of them can be. But, I mean, for this time, just enjoy the ride. I think it's going to be fun, and we'll see where it takes us. Heading into 2021.
Put this in perspective. It is incredible competition for these players to get where they are. And it is pretty remarkable when you really think about it. He's Brian Chiaretta, American Soccer Now. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. We always love having you on the show. We'll do it again real soon. And maybe we'll get you back on after these two friendlies.
I can't wait, Glenn, anytime you need.
That does it tonight for Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm in Austin, Texas tonight. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. Personal injury attorneys, they are bilingual. The Daspit Law Firm, thanks to John and his firm for getting this show on the air. Also, a big thank you to Austin FC President Andy Lochnane. Also to Brian Chiaretta of American Soccer Now. Producer Sam Pica, Victor Ariza, we thank everybody for your contributions. Please hit the show up via podcast at hornfm.com. Go to the podcast category. And until then, it's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters. Thank you, Austin, Texas.